again. We're continuing our topic. I want to say one brief word of introduction was that I looked up, we mentioned a few weeks ago, the topic of menswear, like what is defined as sneas. Rav Moshe actually does have a tshuva regarding what he thinks is sneas for men to wear. I thought about bringing it in. It's pretty short, but I thought it might be worth reading it in context of what he thinks sneas is in general. So maybe we'll share that for a different time, but he does actually have a tshuva about men's wear and what sneas looks like for men. And it's fairly permissible. That's the basics. Okay. But in terms of our topic, we've been covering for the last number of weeks Jewish identity, something which I think could be more relevant today than even today is more relevant than maybe it was last week. Just we saw over the last Shabbos, a Jewish synagogue was attacked for no really apparent reason. There was no reason that the person who wanted the means, the goals of the particular terrorist were not Jewish. There was really no Jewish involvement, and yet a Jewish synagogue was targeted. So it really puts in perspective. And fortunately, we live in a country where this is very infrequent, very rare. But nonetheless, I think it's definitely something to think about in terms of Jewish identity, in general. And so one of the things
to be noted that they don't distinguish between Reform and Orthodox.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Though I think generally when they do, I'll take it back.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely. Yeah, they don't. Absolutely. So let's, the last topic we started was we started specifically talking about the kippah. Perhaps the clearest and best identifier for Jewish males is the wearing of a covering on top of a head, people have dealt with for, a while now. And Rav Moshe specifically deals with a society in which people sometimes feel threatened wearing a kippah. There's several questions he's asked, and we started dealing with some questions where he's asked when it comes to financial means, when it comes to acquiring a livelihood, getting a job, where potentially wearing a kippah may dissuade an employer or may prevent you entirely from getting a job. And Rav Moshe dealt with that question, and we saw that what was interesting was that in 1955, when Rav Moshe dealt with the question in abstract, he seemed to position that there were two positions within, within the Achronim, two general views, and he seemed to like the view of perhaps the more machron position, the position of the Taz, who argued that the wearing of a kippah is part of Chukat Akum, that there is a prohibition of following the ways of the non-Jews, particularly if it relates to their religion or something they do for no apparent reason, and wearing a kippah would seem to fit under their religious practices, where if you're a good, Catholic or Protestant individual who goes to church, when you enter the temple, when you enter the sanctuary, you take off your hat as a form of respect, and therefore the feeling was that for Jews to do the same would be a form of chukat akum, of following the ways of the non-Jews, and therefore would be forbidden for us to ever take off our kippahs. That's the way that Rav Moshe seems to understand the question in abstract in 1955. We saw then, though, that when he's asked the question in almost 20 years later, and he's asked the specific question about wearing it to a job interview, Rav Moshe seems to say it's permitted, entirely. And that particular opinion, he argues, what is the difference? Times have changed. That the practices of the past no longer apply nowadays. We no longer act the same way in society. People do not wear hats as a form of respect the way they used to wear hats. And therefore, even though he thinks potentially maybe you don't have to hold like a taz anyways, in Malkum Tzorech, Chesed Gadol, in situations of, where there's a real need to hold differently, to accept a different position, regardless, he thinks that the taz, even the machmir position, that position which was prohibitive, would not apply in our situation. That's what we saw last week. Any comments or questions about that, or any further thoughts?
Let me just copy this.
All right, great. So what I want to do is continue, because Rav Moshe has a few tshuvos on this, and I think that it It's worthwhile seeing some of these chuvos just to get a sense of the lot of some of his repetition, but some of the Rav Moshe adds some new points which are worth just discussing and seeing through as we go through the chuvos. So we're gonna go with I don't know what page it is. I think it's the third page, source number 8. We saw the other ones, we saw the previous ones. Source number 8. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Choshen Mishpat. And you may wonder why is this a kippah? Kippahs are discussed in Or HaChaim, in Or HaChaim Siman Bet. So why is a tshuva about kippahs in a Choshen Mishpat? It
was having a livelihood.
It was a livelihood, exactly. And livelihoods are about our money dealings. So it's in Choshen Mishpat, that's exactly why it's there. So in Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Aleph Siman Sadi Gimel, 93, Rav Moshe is asked this question, and it's a rather short tshuva. Rav Moshe is asked, "V'davar in mutar lekabel avodah b'makom sheet starich zelechad begilu rosh," with regard to accepting a job in a place where you're going to have to walk without a kippah. Why this? You know, he doesn't give any background. We're not told like any of the circumstances here, but I guess this is the accepted. You know, this is what's going to happen. You're not going to have to wear a kippah. So Rav Moshe says, "Pashut shimutar." Of course, it's going to be permitted, and he's going to go through a similar logic we've already explored in previous tshuvas. One, because ein mechuyav lahafsid mamon b'shvil zeh, you're not chayav to lose money due to this. It's only at the end of the day, elahu minhag tov. It's a good minhag, but it's not actually a prohibition. Ve'alf la'taz, even according to the taz, that position, which was the most prohibitive, who thought that there was an actual prohibition, at the end of the day, she's over b'zman zeh who asr mitzat chok akum. He says, "Halavad she'en dino baror." A, it's not clear we pass connect the taz. It's not clear that the taz, we actually hold. We have to, you know, abide by this position. But even more significantly, hine taloi davarzeh la'taz b'hamikomot. For the taz is going to depend on each place, and each place is going to have its own practices. Ubimdina zu vaday ein zeh mishum chok akum the ruvan einam nizharim b'chukeim. And in this country, it's clear that wearing a hat, walk outside, it's not going to be a problem of chok akum. And here his language is very interesting. This language of ruban enam nizhirim b'chukeyam, that most of them are not careful, stringent with their laws, with their practices, their customs. Now it seems, in context, what he's saying here is that that people are not careful with this particular custom. That, you know, most people when they walk outside, you know, of all creeds, don't necessarily wear a hat. I mean, right now it's very cold outside, but in the summer, you don't see necessarily so many people wearing hats, you know, every single day. They're not particularly stringent about that particular practice. But his language actually may suggest a little bit further. Enam zirim b'chukeyam sounds like Rav Moshe is making this larger societal point that it's not just that this particular rule, this particular social custom that people are lax and are not so stringent. It sounds like Rav Moshe may be suggesting that in most of the social practices within America, people are pretty lax. And I think it's fairly true. I mean, I can't speak for, you know, whenever this truth was written in the 70s, but certainly today, you know, we certainly have certain social customs, certain social norms, what to wear and what not to wear. But in terms of like real abide, like, if you compare America to other countries, you know, especially formal European countries, you know, you can see pretty clearly that there's a very different attitude when it comes to like what must be done. You know, Americans believe very strongly in a sense of freedom. No one can tell me what to do. No one can tell me if I want to, you know, certain medical practices can't be mandated. You know, nothing can be telling me what to do. I believe very strongly in freedom and freedom to do what I'd like, to do to my body what I'd like, to wear what I want to wear. You know, everything is, we believe so strongly in that sense, that I think it really does reflect a lot in the way that our social practices are conducted. And I think Rav Moshe is making the point that if, of all countries in America, making some principle that something is forbidden because this is the way things are done, like if the non-Jews do something, makes the least amount of sense. Because non-Jews don't do anything because it's a rule. If anything, if you told them it was a rule, they would do the opposite. They would stop doing it. So I think Rav Moshe is making a very acute point about the fact that in America, he really doesn't think the principle of chukoteyam, following the customs of the non-Jews, really apply to dress code and wearing a hat or wearing a head covering or the like. However, nonetheless, despite giving a full permission to not wear a hat or head covering, Rav Moshe does add, aval Vadai is in the underline section. Vadai rak b'makom avodato she'al zeh hei makpidim yerashai amal kishyeti l'cheder acher v'kosh again kishyeti l'shuk ye asur afim lo yali af im yali golav kevan shelo yaftid nishrato v'avodato b'shvil zeh. Nonetheless, despite being given a blanket heter, blanket permission to not wear head covering while in the office, Rav Moshe says, once you leave the office, whether you go into a different building or you just walk outside, you take the train or whatever your transportation back home is, at that moment you have to put back a hat on. And he thinks even that's true, even if you're going to be made fun of, even if people on the subway are going to gawk at you, nonetheless, you still have to put the hat on. He thinks that a head covering is significant enough, either as a minhag or maybe even as a chok, some type of actual prohibition, that in moments where your job is not actually at risk, you would be obligated to put the head covering back on. Of course, when he's talking about people gawking at you, that does not refer to any possible physical harm. Rav Moshe, I think, is of course not suggesting that that's the situation, more in terms of social scorn, that just people are going to look at you funny. But, that's not the same thing as, physical harm or the like. That's the tshuva in Chelek Aleph Siman Tzadi Gimel. Any questions thus far? Okay, I want to do a similar tshuva. We're not going to read the whole thing because it kind of repeats itself. But a similar tshuva, one more tshuva where really this idea comes up. And that is in Chelek Dalet Siman Yud Aleph of Yoridea. This tshuva is actually a compilation of a bunch of different things that Rav Moshe wrote relating to Chukot Hagoyim, practices of non-Jews, and this whole section actually is all written posthumously. It's based on a bunch of writings that he had, and it was compiled actually after his death. Do with that what you will, but it's certainly a later writing. So Rav Moshe is saying, in general, he's kind of laying out the principle, what is Chukat Akam, when does it apply, when does it not apply? It says as follows, Hinei pashut, le'aniutati, de'af mashu v'adai nechshav Chukat Akam. When we talk about defining what is a practice to which the non-Jews do such that it'll be prohibited, so what type of practices are prohibited, what type of practices are permitted, so he says as follows, Im hu davar shechazinan sheosim kein lekuli arma denachrim, gam ela shelosh reich leklal limunatam b'chukheteyam. If we see that there is something that all the non-Jews do, even those who are not affiliated with any particular creed or religion, which is probably true for most Americans, that even if there's loose, especially in New York, most people are not religious. Even if they're, they might still celebrate Christmas, but they're not celebrating as religious Christians. They're celebrating it as, the norm. I'm sure if you were writing his tshuva in the South somewhere somewhere in Texas, maybe you'd say a little bit differently. But certainly here, most of the non-Jews are not particularly affiliated with any creed or religion. And rather, why are they doing certain practices? Rather, they're doing something simply because it is more pleasurable. Because this is, this is an easier, a more relaxing way, a more pleasurable way of doing something. And there, and in those scenarios, leka al that isad chuktam lo telechu. There is no prohibition. And he gives you an example. What is an example, kind of proof to this idea? Let's say, for instance, one of the Pope or decides to make some type of rule that, hey, every single person has to eat healthy foods. Make some rule, right? There's some type of papal edict, papal bull, making a statement that you have to only eat healthy foods, and he mandates the requirement to eat, soy and tofu, And so would that mean all of a sudden that it's prohibited for Jews to eat tofu? I mean, I might be happy about that, but for people who are vegetarians or vegans and like eating tofu, right, that can be prohibited to them. So I think it'd be very hard to say so. And most of the exact, of course not. Of course it's not going to be prohibited just because they do it. Just because they do something doesn't inherently make it prohibited, even if they started with it. It's only prohibited if they're doing it based on that's an actual practice of their religion. But if they're doing it simply because, it makes sense, it's something that gives them pleasure, so, it's not going to be prohibited. Any type of pleasure, let's say, the Pope decides, all, Christians have to, go skiing. So skiing won't become prohibited just because they all do go skiing. It's something you do because it's pleasurable, because it's fun, You know, it's not subject to this prohibition of chukot akum. And therefore, he says, and we're not going to read through it because it's a little bit long. We've gone through the main part of it. But he reiterates the idea when it comes to wearing a kippah, wearing a head covering, that he thinks that the rule of the Taz, this principle of that there's a prohibition to go outside without a head covering, does not apply anymore nowadays because people of all creeds walk outside without head coverings. They're not particularly stringent about what they wear, what they don't wear, and therefore there won't be an issue. He says, back in the day, if you want to skip to like the middle of the paragraph, it says right in the middle, "V'rak b'motataz v'acharav ulai karav lezmanenu v'ruslan v'polin." In the days of the Taz, maybe even nowadays or close to our nowadays, meaning probably in like the 20s and 30s when he grew up in Russia, maybe at that point you could see that hayap shute ha'am de'akum gamkin holkim etzem albushim gam bekovak she'yochim ebayit lechutzot. Maybe in those times, the average person, you know, even the average, you know, the average Pole or the average, Russian, would walk outside with a hat and they'd have certain practices they would hold by, even if they weren't, you know, particularly like the most religious person, but they'd have certain codes of conduct that they would all apply by. And that might have been true in the days of the Taz. And for that reason, it was prohibited for Jews to follow their practices and to take off their hats and to be, you know, bareheaded. Aval atash ein lovshim klal kova. But nowadays, no one wears a hat. Hargilu harosh rak bishvil achom. People only wear a hat because for heat, you know, and as a form of protection from the sun or to add heat. And therefore, there's no issue. Even the non-Jews who afshe ein amin b'unotan afshim ein lovshim klal kova. Even the non-Jews who aren't Christian take off their hats, and therefore there's really no issue in any scenario. V'nimsta she'asitim ma'ash talekim v'tinu b'zman hazeh, therefore there's no prohibition. V'lachein im et e efshar lasig mishra lifranzato, im lechem rechusar rosho rosho lekebel mishra zu, and therefore if you can't find another job, this is the only job you can, this is the job, if you can't find another job where it allows you to wear a kippah, then you're allowed to accept this job. Now, we discussed this last week, I'll just reiterate it, that Rav Moshe kind of leaves a little bit vague how hard you have to look for a job that's willing to wear, like, allow you to wear a kippah. You know, let's say you're in New York here, and, you know, I mean, I think you could probably get sued for discrimination laws. But at the end of the day, you know, there still are people who are able, you know, you still reasonably could argue that some jobs, like, it's just known, they're not going to allow someone wear a kippah in the job, or you're not gonna have a good chance of getting the job or getting promoted in the job. Rav Moshe is not clear, right, how far do you have to go when you can find alternative employment, but the alternative employment, you know, might not be as good, might not be as convenient, maybe you have to move cities even, right? It's not clear in Rav Moshe how far you have to go and how much of a value wearing kippah should be in terms of the effort that you should take into fulfilling this, you know, minhag. So there's certainly, it's certainly up to interpretation how far Moshe would go on it. But he makes an interesting point in the underlined section, very end of that large paragraph. He says as follows, "V'ein chiluk b'kavanat hanala me'achar shalaka iser mamash." He says what's interesting is that based on his analysis, it actually doesn't matter why the employment office, why the, you know, the HR office or the, you know, the CEO of the company doesn't want people to wear hats. Doesn't want people to cover their heads. If they're a rabid anti-Semite, if they're this intensely religious, Christian who believe very strongly, you know, if they got a dream from the devil last night, like it doesn't make a difference what their reasoning is. At the end of the day, regardless, it's going to be still permitted to take off your hat, take off your yarmulke and your head covering. It really won't make a difference what their motivation is. Since at the end of the day, what we care about in terms of the principles of law here is what is the basis of this prohibition. And it's this prohibition, the idea of wearing a hat, is only at the end of the day a minhag. And it's not really a chok, it's not really this law that they all do so based on social customs. So then even if your particular employer says like, oh, I really don't want you to wear a hat and I feel like it's, you know, embodying a good Christian spirit, you can still listen to him or her. Without fear that, you know, you're actually like being a good Christian, right? It's not actually the same thing as a religious practice, since even if they pretend it is, it's not in practice, it's not actually one. So there's no actual need. You could take off your kippah regardless of their motivations, regardless of what they actually say. So that would fit very well with the Taz lived around the 1700s. So I'm really no historian. I don't know. I don't know when it became widespread. I know for sure that the Talmud records that certain rabbis would cover their heads. I know that the Shulchan Aruch in the 1600s records it as something you should do, and it sounds like people did do it. But I don't know how widespread it was at the time. So yeah, I'm really not a historian, so I can't comment.
Rambam standing with their turbans and other turbans, and you know, those pictures of the Rambam.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the pictures are so informative.
I don't know. You think they got up from somewhere.
The pictures are probably not so informative. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to know how widespread it was, and you know, was it only the rabbis who wore it? Cause certainly the practices of like the scholars was always like a step above the rest of the community. So when did the rest of the community, you know, do these practices? It's always a good question, like historically, you know. And unfortunately, the way history often works is it's often written about the leaders in the community, the kings and queens, you know, the nobles and the scholars, and not so much about the average Joe or average Yankalas in the shtetl. So, good question. I don't really know the history, but yeah, interesting. Okay, the last point Rav Moshe makes in his tshuva, he makes a similar point about that you can, that, Al Kumdumani, Shimelech Bekova Loichbat Lovrach Bikiba, Shikorin Yamaka He Makvidin. He says he thinks that his impression of the situation is that most places, even if you have this, you know, like rabid anti-Semite who doesn't want people wearing kippas in Yafis, he says his impression is that for the most part, they actually don't care about you wearing a hat. They actually only care about you wearing a kippa. And so if that's true, it obviously depends on the situation. I'm not sure if it's always true. But if it is true that they allow you to wear a hat, like a baseball cap or the like, but they don't wear a kippah, so then you should wear a hat. You should wear a baseball cap. You should wear the hat. However, he makes this really interesting point here. What if it's very hot? Right? What if it comes down, your office doesn't want you to wear a kippah. It won't let you wear, you know, a thin layer on top of your head. But they will let you wear a hat. The problem, though, is let's say it's a hot day, there's no air conditioning, and the hat is just very hot. Can you take off your kippah in the office? When you have no alternative, you can't wear like a smaller layer, you have to wear this hat. So Rav Moshe actually says he thinks that in such a situation, you would actually be allowed to take off your hat, which makes a lot of sense, because if the idea of wearing kippah at the end of the day is just this good minhag, so if it's really going to you know, be detrimental to your job, or it's going to be so hot that you're not going to be able to concentrate, and you have no alternative, you can't wear, you know, a kippah, then he thinks it'd be fine, you would be allowed to take off your hat, take off your kippah, and be bareheaded. And when you have to go, leave the office, and then at that moment, you should put your hat back on, but when you're seated in the office, he thinks it's fine. You can wear, you can take off your hat if it's hot. All right, that's the basics when it comes to this tshuva. Any questions or comments?
I think years ago, I was at a sporting event. The announcer said, "We can time for the national anthem." He said, "Gentlemen, please remove your hats." And you stand up and remove your hats.
It's an interesting question. Actually, he does have a tshuva about sporting events. He doesn't address that. He addresses going to sporting events in general, or if there might be an issue with that. But it is a really interesting question. To be honest, like, I would say, like, based on everything you said, like, he'd probably tell you should wear it. You should keep it, because, like, that presumably, it'd be similar to the previous tshuva, where he talked about in a place where people would gawk at you and, you know, have some type of social derision, that'd be pretty equivalent, you know?
Well, I mean, the practice, then, from what I've seen and what I personally do, but I've seen other people do it, is if you're wearing a baseball cap or something at the game, you take it off, but you leave your kippah on. And if you only came with a kippah, people leave it on. They don't take it off. When they're talking about hats, they mean dafka hats.
Yeah, but if you only had a hat, I mean,
if you only had a hat, they would probably expect you to take it off, but they're not kicked out for it.
But I mean, I've been to plenty of baseball games where, like, people don't take off their hats. Like, I mean, we're Americans. Like, people don't follow the rules. It's not like there's no stuff. I really think that line we read in that first tshuva, or Moshe said that, Enam Zehirim B'chukeyam. I mean, I can't speak to the 70s, but certainly in 2021, 2022, you know, people, if it's a rule, people don't follow it.
What about wearing a toupee? What does that do for you in terms of...
It actually is really interesting. I don't know if Ramosha ever addresses it. I would probably say that it probably wouldn't help, to be honest, because I think part of a kippah is that it's... Well, it would help to some extent, but...
If it's a good one and nobody knows...
Right, that's interesting. The interesting question about kippahs, I guess, or head coverings, is how much of it is subjective, you know, personal experience, and how much of it is, you know, objective and other people should see it. And so, you know, the more it's just a personal thing, and we saw that one of the motivations, probably the main motivation for an kippah, is that imta dishmaya aleh, that the fear of heaven's upon you. So if I know I'm wearing this head covering, in theory, like, why should a toupee be any different from, you know, anything else? But there certainly is, like, an aspect of other people, maybe a marked ayin, a communal sense.
Like if you went to shul and all you had on was your toupee.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd also say, I mean, I'd have to do more research into this. I'd also say that my impression is that if you're wearing a toupee, at some point you want it to, like, look and feel to yourself as almost like it becomes like your real hair. It's almost like wearing, like, you know, dentures or something. It feels like it should be, like, part of your body, like a prosthetic limb. And so at some point, if it feels to you yourself that, like, you want it to be considered in your own mind as if it was part of your body, then at that point it's almost like you don't really have the external head covering that would count. So it's kind of like a, you know, catch 22. Like, either you admit to yourself, forgetting what other people think, but either you admit to yourself it's something external, it doesn't look like my head, it doesn't feel like it's my head, it's some foreign entity, in which case maybe that would work, but you feel less comfortable, or you think to yourself, no, it really is part of me, it's like a prosthetic limb, I really want it to be part of my body, but then it wouldn't really work as a head covering at that point. So it's, you know.
There's a riot to anything, but when my mother-in-law, Shalom, passed away, the Chevra Kaddish, when they came to take her away, asked if she had dentures, and I said yes, and they took them, and they put them in her mouth, and she was buried with her dentures, which surprised me because I thought that wasn't part of her body, but I guess they view that it is. So that kind of would support your position as to the toupee being not, you know, being basically part of your body that people would consider to be, and it wouldn't count as a kippah.
Yeah, I think you're different when talking about it, but I think the same thing's true about prosthetic limbs. Sometimes they do bury people with prosthetic limbs too, so. Right. Great. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so we spent a little while, and I still want to do another week on kippah because there's some really interesting tshuvas relating to some other aspects of it. But we spent a while discussing, you know, Jewish identity. We really three topics we've covered is names, right? Having a name which isn't a good Jewish name, but like a name that's, you know, motivated by secular society. We covered clothing, you know, having, you know, wearing jeans or, you know, American style clothing instead of whatever they wore in Poland. And we talked about, you know, is Polish clothing really, really Jewish clothing, or is it just, you know, comes from Poland? And we covered now wearing a kippah. And we saw that in all three of these situations, Rav Moshe pretty much gave blanket permission to follow the practices of the non-Jews. We saw that, you know, there's some differences here or there. We've gone through the details. But for the most part, Moshe's main concern throughout wasn't that there's an issue of assimilation, right? He seemed to, every time that there was, you know, you can imagine almost who's asking this question. You can imagine, you know, this, like, very traditionally minded individual, someone who, like, you know, feels very much connected to the shtetl and the practices of tradition, asking Moshe these questions, expecting Moshe to say, like, you know, these rebel young teenagers who are, like, changing tradition and going against, you know, thousands of years of Mesorah, this is the way we always did it. Like, what are they doing? And her emotion is like, no, like, what's the big deal? You know, you want to wear jeans, what's the big problem? And the question, I guess, to be asked is, why isn't her emotion in any of these places concerned about assimilation? Right? Why is this a concern? And so if you tell me, like, oh, wait, so, you know, at the end of the day, her emotion is a posek, he's only going to follow the law, and he's, you know, reading of the law sources, and there's nothing wrong with it, so why should he care about the, you know, the societal or the sociological aspects to it? At the end of the day, I will point out that there is actually a very significant halakhic source that relates to assimilation. Not just the Midrash. We've quoted it, I think, a few weeks ago, the Midrash about Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim, that one of the reasons they were redeemed is because they didn't change their dress, they didn't change their names. But there's actually a very significant halakha. If you want to take a look, Shulchan Aruch in source number 10, this is in Siman Kuf Nun Zayin, makes a very significant point. Asur le'adam lomar shehu ovi kochavim kidei shelo yargu. It is prohibited for a person to tell others, to tell society, that they are a non-Jew, that they are, you know, a Christian, a worship a different religion, in order to save their life. Aval im kidei shelo yakiru sheyudi mishanem albusho b'shat hagzira mutar kevan sheino omer shehu ovi kochavim. However, if you're to save your life, you are allowed to change your clothing such that it gives people the impression you're not Jewish, despite the fact that you yourself have not said a verbal statement to that fact, but you can give people that false impression. However, nonetheless, the Rama adds in the his comment, V'chozeh lo shari rak b'makom sakana. This is only permitted in situations of physical danger. Aval shelo b'makom sakana. In situations where there is no risk to life, if there's for instance, let's say there is a special tax on the Jews, only the Jews have this tax, then it is prohibited to dress up like a non-Jew to save yourself from the tax, from the Jewish tax. In all of these situations, to protect yourself and dress like a non-Jew, to act like a non-Jew, to give people the false impression that you're not Jewish, in order to save yourself from a situation which is not life-threatening, it is prohibited. And in fact, there's actually a lot of history that relates to this halacha. I just quoted the Shulchan Aruch because it's, you know, the most authoritative short summary of it. But you can imagine throughout the centuries how significant these type of principles are. Think back to, you know, times right after the... you know, Jews have been persecuted for years, and there's always been this sense that if you assimilate, if you become similar to the non-Jews, you'll be saved. Particularly in, looking at the name, after 1492 in Spain, in the expulsion of Spain, after the expulsion in Spain.
Spanish Inquisition.
Inquisition, yes, that's what I was looking for, thank you. After the Inquisition, there were a lot of Jews who, you know, pretended to be non-Jews. And there's, you know, a lot of chubos about how do you recognize a Jew and all the secret practices of the, I think, Muranos is the word, of the Muranos, all the secret practices. And there were a lot of discussion. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I don't understand people, especially, if, you know, of course, a lot of these situations, there was actual threat to physical life. But this was an issue that people dealt with, that post-Kim dealt with for really hundreds of years, about when is it permissible to look like you're not Jewish. There are even a bunch of Holocaust chuvos relating to situations of when are you allowed to look like you're not Jewish. And there are certain exceptions, you know, especially the Holocaust obviously was life-threatening. But, you know, regardless, even though it's life-threatening, there still are these chuvos because assimilating is a really big problem. You know, and, you know, sociologically, if you were, you know, if you were like a sociologist or, you know, and you were studying the Jewish population, it'd make a lot of sense. We're a small minority, often in foreign lands. And so we have to be very careful to, you know, as a society, to, you know, preserve our customs, preserve our identity in order for people to recognize us, in order for us to have a certain identity. Now, I don't mean to say that as like a normative halachic psak. I'm just saying even as a sociologist, this is a pretty standard practice in terms of preserving identity in foreign societies. And so, Halacha has dealt with this issue for hundreds of years in terms of dress, in terms of names, in terms of all of these things. And what's surprising, I'll get to your question, Bell, in a second. What's surprising is that Rav Moshe in all of these chuvos makes no mention of this, right? We saw these chuvos, and I really didn't skip anything like of this nature. Rav Moshe's talking about it, and he gives blanket permission. He's not worried about looking like you're not Jewish. He's not worried that, you know, you're going to be assimilated. He gives you permission. Even a kippah was a purely halachic question of following the practice of the non-Jews in Chukot Akum, but he's not concerned about this main problem of, you know, looking like non-Jews and becoming assimilated, which is a really interesting thing to think about. I'll let you guys, I guess, percolate on that. I'll take Bella's question or comment. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That was a big question. There are two votes to deal with. There's a number of shows. I actually was thinking of doing maybe one of them around Yom HaShoah, which I think is right after Pesach. But there's a bunch of questions about, you know, can Jews wear, can you have like a baptismal passport? I don't know if that's I can still have that as a thing, but I guess there's like some type of documentation.
I think it's called baptismal certificate.
Certificate, yeah. Like there's a certificate that you've received that you've had been baptized. So can you have one of those, even if it's a fake one? But then you're clearly looking like you're non-Jewish. You know, there are a bunch of tshuvos relating to these type of issues. Wearing cross would be a good example. And this is something they've dealt with a lot. And, you know, I want to leave them there as like do them justice. And we should read them inside and see the context for them. But this is something that, and the answer was not always yes. Be very clear. Like the baptismal certificate, I'm pretty sure most people said no, despite the fact that, you know, their life were clearly in danger and, you know, in the 1940s. Regardless, like this is a really big issue. And, you know, historically, you know, if you study Jewish history, even, you know, the slightest, like, you know, that, this is a real fear, that Jews have had for centuries. And so, yeah.
For a spy, somebody spying for Israel in an Arab country or where it wouldn't be a cross, certainly, but, you know, something to that effect.
It's an interesting question, and then to how far. I'd assume most people would say that, like, you know, dressing to give people the false impression, maybe that's okay, but not, you know, not like actually, like, you know, wearing a cross or something. But it could be that in certain exigent situations where you could argue that the stake of the Jewish people as a whole, you know, you're like an Eli Cohn figure.
That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, you're an Eli Cohn figure, you know, in Syria, and, you know, you're trying to save, you know, really Israel from really the menace that Syria was for, you know, decades. Maybe then it'd be different. Yeah, there's certainly some really interesting truths about, like, you know, spies and you know, prime ministers or the like, what the laws are for people who are dealing with matters of state and Jewish survival. But Rav Moshe isn't really talking about the individuals. Getting back to that, I'll give another comment. And I think it's really interesting. And I have no sources to show you here, because it, you know, the absence is really what I want to talk about. And I think the answer, like, why isn't Rav Moshe mentioning any of this? Why is Rav Moshe completely deviate? And, you know, you can imagine this is kind of what's on the mind of anyone asking him the question. They might not be, even if they're not scholars, even if you're not, you know, a particularly learned person, you still have this sense of, you know, especially if you grew up in a certain, you know, background, you sense of this is the way Jews look. This is the way Jews act. This is the way my parents looked and my grandparents, you know. And I think, and this would be kind of the legal argument standing behind it, is we have this intense identity, this preservation of identity in order to, you know, preserve our peoplehood, and not be worried about assimilation. And assimilation, you know, anyone who knows American history knows that assimilation is a very real threat. So Rav Moshe doesn't address this at any point. And it would seem, to me at least, that in Rav Moshe's mind, these things we've talked about, names, clothing, and wearing a head covering for men, though they are certainly markers of Jewish identity, he doesn't think they're integral enough to Jewish identity to be sufficient grounds to prohibit, you know, changing them. That if they were so integral, you know, if they were something integral, like, you know, learning Torah is or something, or going to shul for a minyan, I'm sure Moshe would have been come down a lot stronger. You can't assimilate, you know, and look like the non-Jews did not go to shul. But I guess he felt that clothing and, you know, even wearing a kippah were not significant enough definitions to our identity, such that he felt that really you could follow, you know, the practices of everyone else, and that there was really no fear when it comes to them. And I think that that's one of the things that Rav Moshe is really unique about, because I'm not sure that so many postgames, certainly not the Haredi postgame, but, you know, even in Israel, even modern Orthodox postgame, I'm not so certain that if you read their tshuvos, it's not so clear that they're that they have the same mindset, and you know, they might believe a lot stronger in, you know, preserving Jewish identity, you know, even in these external markers. And so there's only really to think about is Rav Moshe's permission here. It's not intuitive, and there's what to think about. What does it mean that Rav Moshe doesn't care about these external markers? Does that suggest that he thinks other external markers or other things are more significant? He doesn't go through it, but you know, there's something what to think about. All right, the last thing, anybody else have any thoughts on that? The last thing I want to cover for today, I want to briefly mention, because we've talked about kippah in, you know, society, in a societal context, in terms of going to work, in terms of walking on the street. And I mentioned last week that kippah in general has a number of halachic situations where it comes up. And one of the situations, probably the most strict situation, is specifically surrounding divrei kedusha, things relating to, you know, making brachot and entering synagogues. That's the situation in which kippah is the most strict. That's appeared most strict in Shulchan Aruch. And indeed, while Rav Moshe had given, you know, kind of his blanket permission to go to work without a kippah in certain situations, when it comes to davening, Rav Moshe takes actually an incredibly strict stance on davening without a kippah. So if you want to turn, Rav Moshe, this is the second to last page, I think. It would be 413 that I did not label it, but it's under section davening without a kippah. It's a tshuva from Chelek Dal Siman Mem of Or HaChaim. And Rav Moshe is writing to one of his peer students, Ephraim Greenblatt, who was a rabbi many years in Memphis, had many tshuvos, revoked Ephraim. And he writes to him a number of tshuvos, and he says the follows. Mish yipalel b'shogeg b'gilui rosh, u'b'davar achad shiyipalel b'shogeg b'gilui rosh. What if you accidentally daven without a kippah? This isn't even intentional, right? You come to shul and, you know, you had your kippah on the way to shul, and maybe the wind struck it off and you didn't notice. Maybe you're wearing a hat and it came off while you took off your hat. When you took off your hat, maybe you put it in tefillin, whatever the situation is, your kippah fell off accidentally.
It'd be more so at home, I think, that you forget to put it on or something. In shul, somebody would point it out to you.
Yeah, it could be. Or maybe if you're very tall, nobody notices. Oh, yeah, there are certain situations. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So you forget to wear a kippah. So what is the principle when it comes to davening? Because I would have thought, if you're asking me, I would have thought, you know, of course you should wear a kippah. Of course, like, you know, there's a requirement, especially during davening. But if you forget to wear a kippah, okay, so you forgot, like, it's not, you know, do better next time. But it shouldn't be something which is me'akev. It shouldn't be something which davening is contingent upon. You know, you forgot your kippah. But Rav Moshe takes this incredibly harsh stance. He says, Hine, le'aniu dati, b'mdinotenu, she'akum olchin litfila dafka b'gila rosh. He thinks that nowadays, we've talked so far that the Taz's principle when it comes to chukot akum, practices of the non-Jews, doesn't apply when it comes to walking the street or in the office. But Rav Moshe's contention, and we saw in the first tshuva, Rav Moshe believes that the Taz's principle does apply in churches, in places of worship. That in places of worship, and this is still true today in churches, that men take off their head coverings. That is still the practice. And Rav Moshe feels that for that reason, wearing a head covering, taking off your head covering, even if accidentally, during davening, is a manifestation of this prohibition of chukoteim lo telechu, following the practices of the non-Jews. And as we saw, he really thinks that is very compelling. He likes this position of the Taz, and therefore, there's going to be this problem if accidentally your head covering falls off during davening. She'isur gamurhu midoraita lipalel dekuei rosh. Therefore, it is going to be a prohibition min ha-Torah from the Torah. There is a biblical prohibition to daven without a kippah. Even though you can disagree with the Taz, he thinks this is the principle. He really thinks that you pass in this way. Aval b'shah, and he said that this is the practice they do when they daven. This is how the non-Jews, the Christians, they actually practice in their churches. I'll skip a little bit, and he says therefore he suggests she'im kain, if your kippah falls off, tefilato to'eva. His davening is defined in halachic terms. The term is toiva, which literally means abomination. But it's like, it's a halachic sense in davening. Then it refers to a practice in davening, which is, you know, inacceptable. Similar types of situations. Kidita, gabi, palo, matar, soa, bigumikomo. The Gemara gives an example. What is like a similar situation? What if you daven somewhere and you discover soon afterwards that, there is, you know, waste, like biological waste, you know, excrement, right near you. And so that's the situation where the Gemara describes as a case where it's, your davening is called filato toiva. It is a, you know, a, an abomination. It literally means like it's an inacceptable davening. And there's certain rules about what applies, what doesn't apply. But the general rule is that you'd have to repeat davening. You know, if I'm davening in a field, I'm on a hike or something, and I daven in a field, and all of a sudden I discover after I finish davening mincha that, you know, there's human waste right next to me. I just didn't notice it. I would have to daven again. And Moshe thinks that wearing a kippah during davening is the same, has the same significance. It is following the practice of the non-Jews. It's like avodah zara, and therefore, mimela gam achukim eich lavdam uteiva, and therefore you'd have to repeat davening. And vada yesh lomar liponin im kiso risho. There is an actual mandate. There's a requirement for you to check your head. You should have to check your head to make sure it is covered. And he actually goes on. I'm not going to read it. It's like a little rather on tshuva, but he actually goes on in the next paragraph on the page. He says yesh makom lomar. He doesn't say this with certainty, but he says this. He thinks that is a very strong likelihood. I think this is probably the way he passed him. The palo begile rosh asheya ones gamur. Let's say there's a situation where it's not accidental, right? It's not that you could have checked, but let's say there's an actual case of ones, right? You're entirely blameless, right? For whatever reason, like you're blameless. I don't know if he gives an example, but your kippah falls off, and there's no way for you to realize. I don't know. Let's say like some kid decides to like you know secretly take it off, you know like. And like some talented kids are able to, you know, remove or place objects, you know, discreetly on people's backs. So they're able to take off your kippah without you noticing. There's no way for you to have known. In such a situation, even though your onus gamur, it's completely blameless, which the rule when it comes to, for instance, the human excrement would be that you wouldn't actually have to daven again. Because if you were blameless, if you could have looked and you didn't look well enough, that'd be different. But if you had no way of knowing, then you would not have to repeat it. Nonetheless, he thinks that because we're concerned with this, like, really a avodah zara issue of following the non-Jews, he thinks that potentially you'd have to repeat davening. And so, any situation in which your head covering falls off, in any situation, davening is going to be invalid. And Ramosha takes this very, very hard line on this point, which I think is, like, really, in some ways, both surprising, on the one hand, especially, you know, considering what we've read. But on the other hand, I guess it kind of makes sense, right? Since Rav Moshe felt so convinced that the Taz's position about Chukot Akum, that at the end of the day, he really is convinced that the main prohibition when it comes to wearing a kippah relates to following the practices of the non-Jews. And we saw when it comes to working and, you know, stepping outside, in America, most non-Jews don't wear a hat. And so it's not going to be something that we're going to mandate when it comes to, you know, going to get a job. But when it comes to prayer services, when it comes to something that the Christians do take off their head coverings, then Rav Moshe is extremely principled in this regard and thinks that even in a situation of complete onus, complete accident, there's no negligence in this situation. Just completely out of your hand, and you weren't wearing a head covering. Nonetheless, even after you finish davening, you'd have to go back to the beginning of davening and start all over again. Yes.
How about you make a bracha on an apple, you finish eating it, and you realize you didn't have yarmulke on?
So it's an interesting question because he's talking about davening. In theory, davening is fairly identical to making a bracha, but you could make a differentiation. You shouldn't ideally make a bracha near like excrement either. It's not the same prohibition. But there's certainly we'll talk about. I'm not sure.
On eating, before you can.
Yeah, well, if you already finished eating, then you shouldn't make a bracha if you have nothing else to eat.
We make all of it. We make all of brachas.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just do Rosh Hashanah probably wouldn't be as machin for brachos, but honestly, like based on his analysis, I wouldn't. You could.
Well, Rav and Isha would definitely tell you to wear a kippah when you say a bracha, but if the case was b'shogeg.
Yeah, but it seems like just an analysis, even for davening. I mean, you can make a similar argument for brachos. It's hard to know how far, but absolutely, I think that there's.
Maybe the argument is maybe if it's because the mazon it again.
Yeah, it's a deraisa.
Having added it after the fact, so you can repeat it and get something out of it. You can't do the bracha again and undo something that.
There also is a deraisa.
No, you could have some more cake, but what if there is no more cake? You don't want any more cake.
Yeah, there's also the deraisa, so you could, there's what to talk about for sure. I mean, there's what to talk about for sure, but I think it's a good way of like kind of ending, you know, this discussion, to think about, you know, Moshe really being a lot more strict in this situation. And it, you know, really does flow from his principles in general, that Rav Moshe is not just, you know, interested in giving blanket heterim. He really is a principle posek. In some cases, that might give you permission. In other cases, he's going to follow that same, those same principles, the same scruples, and he's going to end up being very machmir. In a way that, just mind you, most poskim do not agree with this. Most poskim think that if your kippah falls off, especially if it falls off and you're totally blameless, they should not repeat davening. So I definitely would ask your local Orthodox rabbi if this does happen to you, because I'm not sure he would tell you to follow Rav Moshe. But it certainly fits within Rav Moshe's flow that he is so principled in this matter, that he was makel in one sense, and people might not be as makel, and he's machmer in the other, where people might not be as machmer. All right, that's it for today. If anyone has any questions, feel free to ask. Otherwise, next week and finish up the topic. Have a great day. Thank you.